Episode 203. Let's jump right into it, shall we?
Episode 203, in which we continue our adventure.
That's a nice letter from Alabama that we got.
Yeah. Thank you, Alabama.
Thank you, Alabama. Just entitled, "You Saved My Freaking Sanity."
You're welcome.
But, you know, that costs us our sanity. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those illegal immigrants are taking away our sanity, Driftglass.
They are.
I don't know what we're going
to
do.
Well, Obama's taking our sanity away and give it to them immigrants.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for October 25th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the 1986 New Jersey DMV IT department, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Did you know that there was a phenomenal IT screw up this week, Driftglass?
I had heard about it.
No, I don't think you have. I don't know. Maybe you did. It was about Weight Watchers.
I didn't hear anything about it.
Now everybody's going to know that I'm on Weight Watchers online, and it's not going very well. But I got an email from them this week, and it said, in an attempt to improve your member experience. Okay, you know it's going to be very bad.
It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot. Yeah.
In an attempt to improve your member experience, we made an upgrade to our database yesterday.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, it didn't go so well. The good news is that we're back on track. What about the bad news? Unfortunately, if you tracked online yesterday, that information is no longer available.
It went bye-bye. It went bye-bye. Sorry about that.
The foods you wrote down and entered, the weight you entered, there's no way to sugarcoat it.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday's information is gone.
First of all, I think using the word sugarcoating for
Weight Watchers is really bad.
Dubious.
Secondly, they should have told us that in the morning.
Yeah.
That, look, everything you eat today isn't going to count.
It's free. Thanks a lot, Obama.
Thanks, Obama. You've had experiences, Driftglass.
I have.
With database problems. And...
I've had every kind you can imagine. I have had very large IT projects, in the insurance industry.
Oh. And you told me that last night that you were not the guy who developed the system. You were the guy who fixed the system after the guys who were contracted to write the system spent all the money and went on vacation.
Yeah. The reason we had the opening we did today was I used to have a thing thumbtacked over my desk everywhere I went. It was an article entitled Anatomy of a 4GL Disaster, Fourth Generation Language Disaster, which is a story of the New Jersey Department of Motor Vehicles completely and epically screwing up a giant software project that there were two ways to do it. One was the shiny, cool new way involving lots of consultants, Price Waterhouse. And one was the sort of old, battle-tested way of doing it. And they went with the new one because you don't get promoted in the IT world unless you do the shiny new thing.
Right.
And it was just everything that was wrong. It was everything that's wrong with Obamacare 35 years later is exactly the same. There are people, I guarantee you, inside of the IT department and government who saw this coming months ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was inadequate testing or no testing at all. People radically underestimated what could be done. People underestimated the complexity. And that's sort of the IT part of it. But what always interested me was the human side of it, the how you get promoted in IT and why projects fail in IT. And I sincerely believe I am quite an expert on those things, having seen them up close and personal, having had careers just go up in smoke because somebody else screwed up an IT project. For it used to be the world was divided into the production side and the development side.
Mm-hmm.
And the development side was the sexy side where you learn brand new languages and you do incredibly new, cool things, although it never really was all that cool. But they would always have a budget and a timeline, budget and a project plan. This project will cost $500,000. It'll be done by July 1st. And you know what? It was always done by July 1st. It always cost $500,000 or less. And the reason they did that is because the people I worked with just left on vacation on July 2nd. They took whatever they had been fiddling with and screwing around with, and the people I watched were literally cutting their old programs to pieces, taking big chunks out of them and just patching it into the new thing.
Wow.
They would move from the development environment where it couldn't hurt anybody to the production environment where it couldn't just destroy itself. It could destroy all the other systems that were linked to it. And they would leave for vacation. They would just go.
Well, and their budget for development of this project was
now zero.
They had delivered on time, was what you said. They had delivered the project on
they
time.
We used to joke they had cleanly compiled the program, which all it means is it ran through the thing that turns the COBOL language, whatever you're using, into machine language, and it didn't explode. Right. Didn't mean it worked. Didn't mean it ever ran. Didn't mean they never tested it. But it actually they took this monstrosity, and this happened. The reason I'm mentioning it is it happened over and over and over and over and over again. They would take whatever the hell they had on the deadline, shove it out the door, and say, this is now a maintenance problem. Mm-hmm. I'm going on vacation. And they would go, notoriously, the next day leave for a month in Egypt. Mm-hmm. Now, my team always got dinged because our overtime was so extensive. And this is the
so funny.
Psychotic dynamic of how they measured success in the IT world. Yeah. The people who were on time and on budget, despite the fact they had created a monster, were rewarded. The people who cleaned the mess up were lectured about being better stewards of the company's money and being more careful about overtime until, in some cases, we literally had to sit down the HR person and not let her leave the room and explain what was going on. And she just didn't believe it. Yeah. So, no, this is how you get ahead in this field. Mm-hmm. And so the most powerful words in IT, as far as I know, are, sure we can, boss.
Yeah.
And you commit to one colossal project after another that is completely outside of your ballpark, outside of your wheelhouse. And you have no additional resources to fix it. And the people you're already working with aren't that bright to start with.
Right.
You can sort of figure out that something is probably going to break. And that's when people started getting depressed because they knew at some point someone would pay for this. Some would be martyred to the vice president's incredibly stupid decision to hire her best friend. So once her best friend failed, she got her another job in the company because, you know, that's how the world works. And she lined up a bunch of people to interview for the taking over this job. And the question wasn't, how can we fix it? The question wasn't your competence. It wasn't your resume. It was, can you promise me you can do this in 6 months?
Yep.
And every single person with a shred of integrity said no, because it can't be done in 6 months. You know, I went to the trade show. I've talked to the user groups. This is a 2-year project with twice the staff we have now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next. Mm-hmm. And the first person to say, sure, I can, boss, got the job.
And it's Dogbert. It just is Dogbert.
It really
is. You know?
It really is.
I can answer 700 calls an hour. How do you do that? Oh, just call me.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that person then hired a bunch of, you know, people that she worked like rented mules.
Yeah.
And the contest among the people who were stuck in that particular corner of hell was always which one of us is going to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's at that point, then the bitch manager comes out and starts asking, why aren't you managing your time better? Why aren't you managing your resources better?
Because you gave me half the staff I need and asked me to do it in half the time.
You know, Blue Gal, maybe if you were a better manager.
Yeah, I've
had
that speech
too. And my favorite, of course,
too.
Is maybe if you had a better attitude.
And manage your time better.
Yeah, yes. Look, bitch, I'm here 20 hours a day.
Yeah.
Cleaning up other people's messes. I can tell you right now I know what I'm doing.
Well, I want to connect this to Obama getting as visibly mad as I've ever seen him.
Yeah. Well, there's a cast.
Who told Obama that... Yes, Mr. President, we'll have it ready for you on October 1st.
Well, having intersected with the government on several occasions.
Yeah.
When the city of Chicago went to a department or two and said, yeah, we're kind of late on this, but we need you to set up an entire summer youth jobs program on no funding and no staffing in the next 2 weeks. And that means going out to all 50 wards and collecting thousands of resumes and screening people. Oh, by the way, find them jobs, go door knocking. The short answer was, I'm sorry, we can't do that because that's crazy, because you should have come to us a year ago or 6 months ago or 4 months ago. But this is just ridiculous. And yet the people I knew absolutely automatically agreed to it because you're not allowed to tell the mayor no. And so the cycle begins. Since your career is completely built on making lavish promises that you have no fucking intention of delivering, the question then becomes, how far down the cascading bullshit mountain hill does the shit run until it finds someone to blame for the problem? Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you, that was just the mayor of the city of Chicago.
When you can,
by the way, I have no idea if the mayor ever meant that or not, but people were always speaking in his name. So when the head of HHS or the assistant head of HHS says, the president wants this, you can goddamn well bet the people in the upper management, the people who decided to launch the Challenger, said, oh, sure, we can launch the Challenger on a really cold day. That's great. We'd be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in some room somewhere, some engineers are screaming their heads off. Are you out of your friggin' mind?
Yeah.
Because one job is political and one job is technical.
Yeah.
And the political people will never pay a price for lying or for cheating. They will be promoted. They will have life eternal inside government. It's the technocrats, the technologists, the people who probably told them months ago this was a bad idea, who will eventually be fired for this, because that's how every IT project works. It's pretty much how life works generally, but we'll just stick to IT projects for the moment.
I also think that there's a finger to be pointed at just the maliciousness against ACA. And the fact that I think a lot of people, including me, thought that the odds that it would be declared unconstitutional were pretty good by the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And so why get geared up for it now as if
probably
until we know if the Supreme Court could declare it constitutional or not?
It's I would take a wild guess. It has something to do with the funding cycle and the delivery cycle.
Yep. And also whether or not you're going to actually have people from the insurance industry in the room with you, which is a political decision. They didn't decide against that with the banks. The banks are writing the regs for all of the, the Frank Dodd stuff. That's the thing that's really concerning a lot of Occupy people. But I have a feeling that they didn't bring on board a lot of insurance computer programmers.
No. It was always going to be complicated. The biggest fights I've ever participated in, and I've always lost, you start off with the deadlines. And then you start backfilling all the crap you want the thing to do. And, okay, we can do this amount of crap. We can fit this amount of shit in a 5-pound bag. Can we have 10 pounds of shit? No, because that's what you have 10-pound bags for. So you end up with hard and fast deadlines that have been promised, that have been laid out, that your funding cycle has been built around, that your hiring cycle has been built around, certain absolute drop-dead deliverables, milestones in your project plan. Here's your Gantt chart. Here's your PERT chart. Here's your, you've load balanced all of your people's vacations. You know when things are going to get done and where. At which point, upper management starts fucking with you and asking you to make massive changes to it. And no, we need it in blue. No, we need it to be on a different platform. No, we need it to be in a different language. No, can it do this 9 other things that we never mentioned before? And invariably, those decisions get made in rooms where the IT people are never invited.
Yeah.
Because we are buzzkills. Again, these are the battles I lost repeatedly, which was, I would be happy to include that. You have to add 6 weeks to my project. Well, I can't do that. Well, then you can't have it.
Yeah.
Or you get to take something you wanted off the table. I have a fixed amount of time, a fixed number of resources, and I have certain deadlines I have to make. Your job, upper management guy, is to make trade-offs and to tell people no when they come in the door and ask for stupid, crazy things. But that doesn't get you promoted to the vice presidency, does it? That doesn't get you a job as a commissioner, does it? So you're going to continue to make ludicrous promises on my behalf. I guarantee you, inside of this system, having been through this with case management systems, working with governments, private sector, insurance industry, over and over for years, to the point I never want to see another IT project again, unless you pay me lots of money and listen to me, in which case I will work for you. Somewhere in the middle there, the part you will never see, are the engineers at the Challenger disaster who told them over and over again, for God's sakes, don't you do this. It's going to be a disaster. They were routinely overruled. They were marginalized. They were called, they're not team players. Their careers were dangled over their head. Future contracts, et cetera, were dangled over their head. And a lot of yeses were coerced from people who should have known better. And a lot of and the only way you get ahead, as far as I've been able to see, with few rare exceptions, in government, is by sucking up and saying yes to whatever the hell the boss wants, even unless the boss is a really smart guy or smart woman, which is terrific.
Yeah, that happens. Every once in a while, that does happen. You get a realist as a manager. Yeah.
But telling them no ends your career.
Yep.
And so nobody ever says no to the Secretary of HHS.
Yeah.
And nobody says no to the President of the United States, except the Congress.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com. I want to do a couple show notes for all you pro-lefters out there. Happy birthday, Driftglass.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank
Driftglass
you.
Turns 50-something.
50-something.
On the 30th? Yeah, 30th.
Yeah, the day before Halloween.
We want to wish happy wedding day to Bob Seska. I'm not sure what day he's getting married, but he's on hiatus on his podcast because he's getting married, a likely excuse.
Uh-huh.
We podcasted on our wedding day. I don't know what your problem is, Bob.
Come on, Bob.
Anyway.
Here's your commitment, Bob. No, happy wedding.
It's wonderful. They are both on their second marriage. We know what that's like, and we wish them every happiness.
And any excuse we can have to have one more episode than Bob for us.
Got you, Seska. All right.
Yeah.
And finally, we have parent-teacher conferences this week, which is really biting into our schedule. And so no Science Fiction University this week. I just don't have time to edit and record it. But for those of you that need some Science Fiction University, Kevin H. sent us a link to Huffington Post.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They have a quiz up of 10 questions. Is this a end of the world science fiction movie? A quote from an end of the world science fiction movie, or is it a Republican talking about Obamacare?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And they're hard to decide.
Because if you do
end of the world, people.
And if you guess one wrong, there won't be much of an America left to save. Yeah, it's pretty sad.
What do you want to talk about first for this segment? Do you want to talk about the Pope or do you want to talk about healthcare?
Oh, man, let's go with the Pope first.
The Pope is saying stuff that he would have been burned for 5 centuries ago.
Really? Or 50 years ago. Yeah.
Things like he doesn't like servitude for women. He believes that the church, everyone in the church should have a sense of service to humanity.
Yeah.
But women need to have a more involved role in the church. And that's as far as he's willing to go right now. And I think that's pretty far for a lot of people. But service, not servitude for women in the church. Good for him.
Yeah.
He has evicted a German bishop from his home, from his residence, while they investigate how he was able to pay for a $42 million residence complex. This guy is the Bishop of Bling. Known as the Bishop of Bling. People are outraged because he built a $42 million residence complex. Apparently, he's quite interested in making sure that he lives well.
Yes. Well,
which Pope Francis is kind of indicating he doesn't like that.
Yeah.
And the Pope has suggested that clerics should focus on their home diocese and the needs of the people in them rather than angle for prestigious postings at the Vatican.
He screwed it all up, man.
Wow, man. I can't get promoted.
Uh-huh.
And finally, and this was something that you brought up.
Didn't Jimmy Carter start off like this?
Yeah.
Sure. Bringing reforms to D.C. and
finally, you brought this up to me about ideology versus theology.
Uh-huh.
And this is kind of deep, but it's radical.
Yes.
He is talking about, he says that the church has a serious illness known as being an ideological Christian. Ideologies, this is what he said, quote, ideologies are rigid, always, of every sign, rigid. When a Christian becomes a disciple of the ideology, he has lost the faith. He is no longer a disciple of Jesus. He is a disciple of this attitude of thought. The faith becomes ideology, and ideology frightens. Ideology chases away the people, distances the people, and distances the church from the people. It is a serious illness, this of ideological Christians. And I just was stunned.
Wow. Yeah. You can say that in a really quiet voice, but what he's talking about is idolatry.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's talking about the worship of graven images,
mm-hmm.
of hard Manichaean versions of ideas.
Absolutely.
There are the sinners and the awful bad people, and there's us.
Yep.
And there's no connection between the two. There's no way to bridge the gap.
He is refusing that sense of Christians must circle the wagons and keep separate from humanity. And that movement that he made very early on to wash the feet of average people and the baptizing of the illegitimate baby in Italy was amazing. The woman who wrote to him and said, my married lover left me and I'm pregnant and he told me to get an abortion and I really don't want to. What should I do? Uh-huh. And the Pope called her on the phone and offered to baptize the baby. I know I've mentioned that before, but this is a very different Pope. And a lot of people like him. He's a Jerry Brown type of Pope. He is.
I had my doubts. I still have my doubts.
I still have my doubts too. Yeah.
He doesn't have an army.
I don't doubt this Pope or his sincerity. And I don't, he's the kind of Pope I think I could have a cup of coffee with. But I doubt his ability to completely reform the institution of the church.
Yeah.
I wish him well in doing that.
I do. I'm not a Catholic. I am not going to ever become a Catholic.
But Jerry Brown was a Jesuit before he...
Exactly. And
It's that kind of...
The best arguments I've ever had in theology were with former Jesuits or Jesuit teachers. And those are the fun kind where you both sort of put down the... you are there for the sake of having the discussion, not to try to kill each other.
Right. I'm going to change course because now that we've talked about the Pope, I want to swear for a few minutes.
All right.
Damn it.
You know, you're going to make Debbie Wasserman Schultz very unhappy.
I don't give a crap about Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
She thinks incivility is a problem on both sides. Yeah. Well, with Alan Grayson.
Alan Grayson comparing the Tea Party to the Klan and then just saying, well, hey, if the shoe fits, wear it because you're a bunch of racists. And she's right.
Oh, this incivility on both sides.
That's not very nice. Yeah. Okay. Nice. Well, you know, when you want to talk about the Kenyan usurper for 8 years, you know, I don't think he's a Christian or an American. Look at his skin color. Yeah.
So I told Debbie she could have my middle finger when she pried it from my cold dead hand.
That's very good.
Thank you.
Well, and Debbie is, let's face it, you know, chairman of the...
She's our Reince Priebus.
Campaign committee. Yeah, she's our Reince Priebus. So that's what she's got to do. It's sad, but...
Yeah.
But I just wanted to point out to everyone that, God damn it, we are not broke in this country.
No, we're not. Turns out we're not broke.
Stop that.
Any more than you're broke if you have a mortgage you can't pay off tomorrow.
Every single week, we are going to go to this website at rollcall.com, which is not a liberal blog, Driftglass.
No. Really? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Really. But they've got a, and I want to hat tip Jamie over at Intoxination for mentioning this to me. There is a column by Kent Cooper and Tony Raymond called Political Money Line over at Roll Call that just looks at money in politics. And is very just kind of states the facts rather than cussing about it. So I guess cussing about it is my job.
Yeah.
Tony Raymond was at the FEC and served as the FEC's first webmaster. Kent Cooper was assistant staff director for the Federal Election Commission's disclosure office for 22 years. They reported this week that there are 21 organizations in America that spend more than $1 million a month lobbying. And they are exactly who you might expect. Chamber of Commerce.
Greenpeace?
No.
No. PETA?
Chamber
no.
Chamber of Commerce actually spends $4 million a month in lobbying. The National Association of Realtors, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers Association, the AMA, Lockheed Martin, General Electric, Google, FedEx, and Verizon. I mean, those are people that you might expect. The National Cable and Telecommunications Association.
Well, those Congress people and senators have to be able to build their $42 million estates, Blue Gal.
Well, and speaking of that, something else that pissed me off, and there's a lot in this website that pisses me off, but pointing out to you that Paul Ryan, that financial genius guy that we all love so much, he has a very successful political action committee of his own that raises money all over the country. And he has been giving away money from his political action committee. A lot of congressmen who have a national profile do this. But he's been giving money away to other congressmen, including people on the House Budget Committee. And he gave away, let me look at my notes here. $182,500 from January to August to candidates on significant House committees like the Budget Committee. His PAC in 2013 has already given out $149,258 to members of his budget committee. Now, that's just a bribe.
Well, and that's just the vacuum created by earmarks.
Yeah.
So now that we can't...
No, but it's not earmarks. It's campaign money.
No, what I mean is, now that we can't trade...
My loyalty... Now that John Boehner can't buy loyalty,
right.
Paul Ryan can. That's
now it's just cash. It's a straight cash for vote deal.
Because yeah. You can just go... And once I do believe that once your campaign is over, that money, you could just spend it on anything. Because remember when Colbert and
yes.
was spending it on gold shoes for himself?
Yeah. Anything you like.
Anything you like. It's Political Action Committee. You can really spend it on anything. You don't have to report it.
And getting that money out of politics is going to be impossible. Well,
it's impossible. I agree. It's impossible.
It is now, the Supreme Court has now made it virtually impossible not to have a system based on bribery.
Yeah, unless people get mad enough.
Right. There's the thing. Unless people get mad enough.
Yeah. And I think it's really significant that liberal television is covering this Texas woman voting thing.
Yes.
Because what makes Americans do something more than anything else is telling them they can't.
Uh-huh.
Monty Python found that out with Life of Brian.
Please protest our movie.
With the Catholic Church, ironically.
It's really, really rude and very insulting to people of religion.
Oh, good.
Perhaps you should surround the cinema with people with signs and protest us, because we're very bad. We're very naughty. Yeah. It works.
And it works. Look, tell people they can't vote. Huh? And all of a sudden, women can't vote in Texas? Really? That's what you're going to do? You're going to try to make it difficult for married women to vote?
There's a certain kind of, not admirable, but sort of clarifying brazenness to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we for a long, long time, politics were murky. You could always point to someone in your own party on the right and say, we're not racist. Look at my special black friend.
Mm-hmm.
We're not homophobic. Andrew Sullivan is at the party. But this centrifuge that's applied to this process over the last 20, 30 years has really, really sort of concentrated and clarified and focused what it means to be a conservative. And what it means is you can absolutely shamelessly move to get rid of women.
Mm-hmm.
Just dump them off the voting rolls in huge numbers as women. Set up a rule that means if you're a woman in this state, we're probably going to kick you off the voter rolls and brag about it.
Mm-hmm.
The guy last night on Comedy Central, on The Daily Show, who was talking about voter suppression and his special black friend. You know he's not a bigot. It is the absolute lack of self-awareness.
Oh, absolutely.
First of all, he doesn't realize he's being recorded, apparently.
Well, he doesn't realize how he sounds to anyone who's not in his bigoted circle.
He rubs shit really in his hair.
Yeah.
He's the tribe that rubs shit in its hair and never notices that they stink. But the thing is truly amazing is it's not 1953 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2013, and these people are still and when they get away with dumping blacks off the roll or calling people racist names or getting rid of women, they smirk about it because it's a win. They spike the ball because they won one for the white people.
Mm-hmm.
They have won, and they're very proud of what they've done. And
I have to say, for what they perceive to be Christianity.
That's the core of the movement. That guy from Comedy Central, that guy who I think it was Asif Manvi was interviewing
him. Yeah,
Who asked him. It was hilarious because at one point he says, can you actually hear yourself?
People can hear you. I think he said people can hear you.
You know that, right?
People can hear you. Yeah.
And it was the absolute pride this guy took in being an absolute raving racist asshole. But he learned from Newt Gingrich and Rush Limbaugh, just deny it.
Yeah.
Say something horribly racist, then say, but I'm not a racist.
Yeah.
Say something horribly misogynist, but say, I'm not a misogynist. And the press, the average reporter, will just shake their heads and go, I don't want this controversy. I don't want a million letters from a million bigots. So we're just going to let you get away with it.
Yeah.
And it is juxtaposing this guy, this raving, and the congressman that you showed
well,
me.
Well, I did want to mention this. He's not a congressman. He's a state rep.
State rep
in Ohio. Matt Lynch was on Chris Hayes last night. And Chris Hayes did a wonderful job interviewing this Republican.
persistent
to find out why he didn't want people to have health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was, well, because if they have Medicaid, then they're going to bankrupt the government and they'll never want to get a better paying job because they'll be stuck in Medicaid and they'll never want to work again, because if they earn any more money, then they have to pay for health insurance. And that's
right.
Just
because poor people like being poor.
Poor people love being poor because it gives them free stuff. Yes.
Like free health care. They choose to be poor because that's awesome. And and the more free stuff, the more sugar, the more government.
And he actually said to Chris Hayes, this was the part that everyone's jaw just dropped. He said, you know, don't you think people are terrorized by lack of health insurance? I drove from Columbus to Cleveland. I didn't see anyone terrorized by lack of health insurance or lack of health care, for that matter.
And it was that. And then he giggled.
Yeah, but you know what, Drift Glass? His district is in northwestern Ohio. I did a little research on him because he gobsmacked me. His district is about 94% white, and two out of the three bills that he's sponsoring in the Ohio House of Representatives deal with, can you guess what they might deal with?
The problems of the poor and dispossessed in our larger cities?
No.
The space program, how awesome it is to push scientific frontiers as far back as they can go.
No. Two out of the three bills he's sponsoring deal with preventing illegals from getting stuff.
Yeah.
Like driver's licenses and in-state tuition. And, you know, we want to keep those illegals from getting stuff.
And the sort of giggling giddiness with which he pushes back on questions like, aren't you a horribly inhumane monster who why do you want poor people not to have health insurance?
Well, and that's the point, is he did not want to make it about that. He wanted to make it about the debt. He wanted to make it about
$17 trillion.
Yeah, he wanted to make it about poor people getting free stuff, and he wanted to make it about process with the way in which the governor got Medicaid expanded in Ohio. And that is the point, and that's something that I want to share with our listeners in terms of vocabulary, which is, if you're discussing ACA, and I do recommend that you shift the debate at this point to Affordable Care Act. Rather than calling it Obamacare, just call it the Affordable Care Act for now. It's going to be called Obamacare forever. But when you get into discussion with anyone about this, make sure you continually turn the conversation to actual insurance for actual people.
Right.
Don't make it about, they will make it about everything else.
Right. Why do you want to keep?
Why do you not want
Americans?
My kid to have health insurance?
Why don't you want?
My mother. You know, the people down the street who both have jobs.
Yeah, they just can't afford it.
Still struggling, can't afford it. Why can't we let them buy it at a discount?
You know, she had cancer 12 years ago. They can't get insurance anywhere.
Right.
The free market will not allow them to have insurance unless
they're
billionaires.
Why do you want to deny them the ability to buy health insurance?
And just keep pressing that.
Yeah.
And eventually they will scream something at you and call you a bigot or a liberal racist or something, a communist, and they'll run away. They're not going to change. Mind you, understand this. They're never going to change their mind. They're not psychologically or emotionally capable of changing their mind, because that leads to
I have convinced people that I thought I would never change their mind with actually consistent sticking to the topic that Medicare for all, with people who can afford it chipping in a little more, is actually the most efficient way to get, because these people are on Medicare and they like it.
Well,
you can get seniors to see that.
Yes. Provision.
And I think that's the thing that Republicans are really missing, is that people who are on Medicare wouldn't mind if their 50-year-old kid was able to get Medicare. That would be fine with them.
But that's true across the Tea
the
Party
spectrum.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Across the
and
Tea Party spectrum.
Point. Yeah.
It's going back, we'll talk in a few minutes about everybody getting their I told you so creds these days. It's just.
We're going to end with that. Yeah.
Which is hilarious. Just friggin' hilarious. But the fact that if you go back to what was it? Matt Taibbi's article.
Back when he was in Kentucky.
Tea and crackers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, interviewing the Tea Party as it was sort of forming. And remember people, there is no Tea Party. Yeah. There is no Tea Party. It doesn't exist. There's just the GOP base with funny hats. That's all they are. That's all they ever have been. Anybody who tells you different is lying to you. Anybody who tells you different is participating in the media rebranding of the same old tired, ignorant bigots who've been in charge of the GOP for decades. So having said that, those people never have any problem with you spending tax dollars on them right. or their kin. They have no problem with that at all. That is part of their natural right as white people, as good white American people. They have a right to all the shit the government can possibly spend on them. New schools for their kids, college tuition money for them, health care for them, retirement for them, roads for them. Keep those parks clean. Keep those streets safe in my little area here and make sure nobody invades my country or my county or my city.
Right. And illegals don't get anything of mine.
Right. I want clean water, clean air, cheap food, green grass, and golf courses to play on. And go take care of that. Mm-hmm. And they have no problem with the government spending itself broke. They had no problem with the government giving them Medicare Part D. Yep. They had no problem with the government invading the wrong country and pissing away $1 trillion of your tax money on that little fantasy. They had no problem with George Bush taking the surplus,
yes.
the budget surplus, and shoving it right back into their pockets as tax cuts, even though 90% of it went to rich people. They never have a problem with the government spending money it doesn't have unless they spend it on people who aren't them. Mm-hmm. And that is the definition of a sociopath, someone who cannot empathize with anyone else other than themselves. A psychotic. The world is divided into people like them and furniture. And if you're not like me, you're an inanimate object who's either in my way or useful to me or something, but you don't really deserve to be treated as a human being. And they have organized an entire ideology under the umbrella of Christianism, or Christopathy, as I prefer to call it, and Randitism, that tells them that that's absolutely true. Being a greedy, selfish, cold-hearted asshole is the same as being a patriot. And kicking poor people in the throat is being a good Christian. And they bought into it. And they can never walk away from that. Because if they do, their whole identity unravels. And there's nothing but a puddle of goo left behind. So they're never going to acknowledge that that happens to be a gigantic lie.
Yep.
What is astonishing to me, this is the part that really does just continue to make me laugh. Because if I don't laugh, I'm just going to start screaming. And I'll never stop. Is the fact that these people, the giggling, lying racists you see on The Daily Show, or that Chris Hayes suckers into coming on his show and ask him, those people who are unashamedly hateful and selfish are the core of the GOP. At the same time, you have people like David Brooks and Charles Krauthammer who spent their entire career pretending that that first group does not exist, that they're not the real Republicans, they're just fringe group people, and they keep bending the conversation away from talking about the problem, which is those people. Those people are the problem. As soon as those people are extinct, no more problem. So it is imperative for anybody who isn't in that group but still wants to pretend to be a conservative or make money off of being a conservative or make money as a Fox News commentator or make money in the New York Times as your reasonable conservative, it's imperative that you divert the conversation away from talking about those people mm-hmm. as they really exist and as they have really existed for your entire adult life. And that's what's fascinating. Watching Charles Krauthammer just with deflectors on maximum on The Daily Show, pretending that they don't exist. That's not really the problem. Let's talk about philosophy. Let's talk about history. And he puts all these, you know, pseudo reasonable arguments out there. And John Stewart's, bless his heart, answer was, yeah, if anybody in your party ever made that argument,
we could have a conversation.
But they don't.
They don't. No.
And it's that's the voice that never makes it to the cocktail party.
Yeah.
The one who drags crazy wingnuts congressman from, you know, sister something Arkansas. I will not say what, because this is a family show. They drags him by the collar into a Sally Quinn cocktail party and shoves that person right in David Brooks's face, says, this guy is your movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And makes him own this.
The guy who's flying the stars and bars outside the White House to show that black president who's really in charge.
That's your child. That's your bastard child. That's Jon Snow. That's the one you won't acknowledge parentage of. And I'm here to tell you, he's yours. You're taking him home and you're taking responsibility for him.
The Get a Brain Morans guy is your responsibility. Yes.
And this is just as big a part as the Tea Party rebranding itself as the Tea Party rather than the Republican base. The conservatives, all those other people, rebranding themselves as they had nothing to do with this. Mm-hmm. And that's where the race to the race to declare who was right first, who's been right all along first, has been cracking me up for the last couple of weeks.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah.
And it's people like
Michael Steele.
Michael Steele
and Joe,
just blew me away.
Joe Scarborough. I was right about Ted Cruz for weeks now. Yeah, I told you this guy was a problem about a month ago. Nobody listened to me then, but hey, look who's smarty pants now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when vituperative liberals do that and say, yeah, you know, we were right about conservatives 30 fucking years ago. We're just rude and we don't know our place and we shouldn't bring that shit up. And it, you know, doesn't really matter. You know, do we have to blah, blah. But when you're on television, when you have a column in, let's say, the Daily Beast or Salon, you say, I was writing about this in early October. You know, I was all over this back then. Here's several links to my columns from several days ago when I said the Tea Party. Why, that's not that they're not a separate group. They're just the Republican Party.
But Driftglass, and I want to mention what I talked with you about at lunch yesterday.
Yeah.
About the safe spaces on the board.
Yes.
The chessboard of media. Hackery.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Has some spaces on it that you're not allowed to land on. Ever.
Me personally, I'm never allowed to land on.
Anyone from David Sirota,
yeah,
to Michael Steele, to everybody on TV,
mm-hmm,
who's a pundit, is, yeah, not allowed to land on certain spaces. And one of the spaces they're never allowed to land on is, you know, truth has a liberal bias.
Yes.
Stephen Colbert, the court jesters are allowed to land on that space all the time and dance, yeah, on it. But serious punditry are never allowed to mention that one side is sane and the other side is crazy.
Right.
Recently, the change has come.
After they destroyed the government.
After they destroyed the credit rating of the United States and moved it from A++ to A-, which.
And shut the government down.
And shut the government down, or as the Colbert Report says, our credit rating is now A-, or as Chinese parents call it, an F.
An F, yeah.
It's now safe to say that Ted Cruz is not a real Republican. Or Ted Cruz is only interested in shutting the government down. He's not interested in governing it. It's safe to attack Ted Cruz.
Right. And to attack Ann Coulter, who said it was a great idea.
And to attack Ann Coulter.
And to attack Rush Limbaugh. And right. to attack those people.
Right.
But it's only safe for the next, you know, this is a limited time offer.
It be safe. Right. And more importantly, who is deciding that it's safe
right.
for them to do that this mm-hmm. week?
Well, and this is where.
And you know who it is? It's the stock market.
Sure. It's GE. It's the
GE,
people who own the company.
It's Northrop Grumman. It's the people that sponsor Meet the Press. That's who it is.
And that's the part that is immensely.
It's hurting them. Shutting down the government is hurting their
sure.
bottom line.
But the conversation that they have, the part, this is where it gets so close to parody. Mm-hmm. It gets so close to killing irony outright.
Yep.
That, you know, that. John Stewart did this on Comedy Central about Karl Rove.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I got more email in the last day about, did you see John Stewart going full drift glass?
Yes, he did.
Karl Rove complaining that the hateful right-wing kill bots that he built have finally turned on him is the most hilariously ironic thing he's ever seen. And John Stewart having a show and having an audience said, bullshit, you are not allowed to do this. You're the one who fed the Mogwais after midnight.
Right.
You're the one who shot electricity into the monster's body. You
now
created
you're going, oh
this.
My God, there are all these gremlins all over the place. Where'd they come from?
And because pundits at that level, at that sort of, you know, the people who get to be on television mm-hmm. are all fighting all the time over who was righter and who was wrong, who was got there first and who got there second. And every so often there's this little window of opportunity where they say, yeah, I was right about the craziness of the GOP for the last several weeks and no one listened to me. And, well, I guess I was right all along. Ha ha. The reason you don't ever have liberals on television is because Liberals like me would say, fuck you, Michael Steele. Fuck you. Fuck you. You were pimping for these assholes shamelessly.
Yep.
You took a job with people you knew were bigots. You knew were racist. And you did it for fucking money. And now you're on MSNBC. And every time you get a chance to bitch about how liberals are unfair, you do it. Because you're still basically a whore. But every now and then they go so far. And they blow up so big that, and because you don't like Reince Priebus because he threw you out of your job, you're the disgruntled former employee who was every bit the asshole Priebus was and got fired by someone who was a slightly bigger asshole than you are and now sits on the edge of the corporate world, sits on television bitching about your former employer.
Driftglass, you've been working on reducing your insufferability quotient on the I told you so, and we've not been right for 30 years and so forth. You got some very loving emails from some of our listeners last week saying, you know, it's actually okay that Charlie Pierce is writing the same stuff you are.
I agree.
And you agree.
I
want to point out to you when you feel down and you feel as if you're being ignored, I want to point out to you, Driftglass, that going full Driftglass is a thing.
Yeah. Well, among
it really is. And there are people
readers,
out there who say that regularly. And we are grateful to them for that.
We are. And
we will get full Driftglass in the Urban Dictionary eventually. We really will.
Well, I'm perfectly happy to see that mode of thought transferred, carried forward.
That's been your life's work, Driftglass.
Well, no, here's the thing. Here's where I draw the line. Here's where I draw a big, bright line. I am delighted to see Charlie Pierce taking up this cross. He's a very good writer and he writes really beautiful stuff and it sounds remarkably similar to me, and I mean that as a compliment. You know, I sound a lot like Harlan Ellison sometimes when I write because I learned my craft from people like that, and we have some of the same sources. We sort of grew up on apprenticing for the same sorts of writers, so I have a great deal of respect for that. It is when I hear the liberal critique, and that's what it is. And Charlie Pierce is a good liberal, and Chris Hayes is a good liberal. And I'm delighted when I hear them talking this way, really and truly. No ands, ifs, or buts. I'd like you to link to me every now and then, Charlie. But other than that, you know, it doesn't put any money in my pocket. And so do as you please. You're doing a fine job. Where I draw the clear, bright line is when I hear conservatives using the liberal critique of conservatism and pretending they just fucking invented it.
Yep.
And without acknowledging liberals exist at all.
Yeah.
You know, when I hear Andrew Sullivan bitching about these Johnny-come-lately moderates like Mitch McConnell, you know, I'm not sure I want to bestow the laurels of moderate on someone, you know, who's so late to the party as Mitch McConnell, says Andrew Sullivan.
He has no mirrors in his house. I've said that before.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's all of a piece. They all participate in the same kind of self-delusion, that delusion that it wasn't me.
Yeah.
It wasn't part of me. It wasn't my doing. I wasn't, you know, I was there for 9/10 of the atrocities, but eventually they fired me. And therefore, I'm now free to say all the things liberals have been saying for 30 years, which is fine. John Cole does it. Charles Johnson does it over at Little Green Footballs. Those are people who said, look, I fucked up. Conservatism really was the disaster liberals have always said they were. And occasionally they backslide, but we give them lots of slack. The people we give zero slack to are the people who continue to insist that this was not a failure of conservatism. And the people who continue to rip off, steal, expropriate, purloin, copy, plagiarize pure liberal analysis of conservatism and pretend that they're still conservatives. And pretend that liberals didn't say this shit for the last 30 years. I don't just mean me. I mean everybody. I mean Harlan Ellison and Rod Serling in the 60s writing this shit. And pretending that critiquing the right as having built its foundation on a foundation of hooligans and thugs and racists is somehow a novel new notion that they just discovered. No, that is conservatism. That's a feature, not a bug. And the fact that there are people who have been saying that to your face for 30 fucking years, and you've been calling those people traitors and liars and un-American. And finally, Joe Scarborough and Michael Steele, it dawns on you because you can't deny it anymore that we were right all along. You get into a scuffle between yourself.
Who'd have thought of it first?
Who thought it up first? And who, because who's smarter for thinking it up first? Well, if that's the case, I should have my own morning show on MSNBC for six fucking hours. Because we thought it up decades ago.
Thank and you.
I just want to end this with this Reagan quote.
Oh, yeah.
That, for me, sort of oddly summarizes how conservatives think about this core of racist ignoramuses or ignorami that they have built their entire movement on and continue to pretend doesn't exist and has nothing to do with them and they had no part in it. It was when Reagan was describing his cancer. And Reagan said, I didn't have cancer. I had something inside me that had cancer in it and it was removed.
I get that from a philosophical standpoint.
I get that as a way of coping with something that's wrong with you.
Yeah.
But as a political philosophy, it's really bad.
And it is really how they think. It really is.
It really is. Yeah. That's not me. I had nothing to do with that. Really? Because here's a picture of you, Karl Rove, in the lab assembling Ted Cruz from old parts of Joe McCarthy.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. And that's when Wolf Blitzer comes on and says, I'm sorry. That's all
we're
the
time
we have.
Hey, Drift Glass, we're out of time.
Yeah, I know. Blue Gal.
We got a wonderful letter, very brief letter. And I know we'll talk about it more in future podcasts, but I do want to get to it. It's a religion letter from our friend Andrew. And Andrew writes, I am a Buddhist, but I very much appreciate discussions of Christian theology and its political implications. Something I hope you'll explore someday is the history of Christian progressivism, specifically the role of the Scopes trial and the very public humiliation of William Jennings Bryan in pushing American Christians to the right. I feel the same way about the present generation of militant atheists. You don't need to subvert your scientific rigor to recognize the legitimacy of people objecting to the idea that they are a random event in the meaningless universe.
Sure.
Recognizing that legitimacy, the psychological bedrock of human beings as meaning-seeking animals, would open up wonderful avenues for discussion. Your podcasts keep getting better and more interesting. Looking forward to the next 200. Kiss, hug, A. Oh. Hey, kiss, Andrew. Kiss, hug to you too, Andrew. Thank you.
That's the first time I heard that letter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Can I respond to it just off
sure,
the top of my
no,
head?
No, absolutely. I wanted to talk a little bit about it. Yeah.
Because we just had Inherit the Wind playing here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a wonderful play. And we were talking about it because the kids were going to go with
the
their dad.
The kids went and saw it with their dad. Yeah.
And we were sort of giving a summary of what it was about. So here's the thing. The militant atheist argument, driving away Christians, driving away conversations, sort of being pushing people away. There's some merit to that. There's a lot of merit to that. I think any two people can have a good discussion when they approach it with confidence in their own skin.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a terrified Christian. You're not holding onto the Bible for dear life because your faith is so weak. You can't engage with anyone.
And your God is so weak, too.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing. God can't handle an atheist. It's so silly.
I believe that's what Jesus said to the zealots, you know, who's stronger, you or your God? Well, of course, I could be wrong. But one thing I'd like to point out to Andrew about the Scopes trial, which did indeed humiliate William Jennings Bryan and kill him ultimately, was the fact that it was an unfair trial.
Yeah, that, very much so.
That Clarence Darrow was not allowed to introduce any evidence other than, I mean, he went as if the play is an accurate representation of the trial, and I believe it's pretty accurate. He wanted to introduce scientific evidence, the age of stones, the theories of people at university, learned papers, all of which was tossed out. No honest Christian would do that. So the trial was already being conducted by fearful, ignorant people who didn't want to talk about science at all and wanted it barred from the door. He had ultimately no choice. His last desperate measure was to put William Jennings Bryan on the stand and humiliate him as a representative of that ignorant faction of Christianity. So I don't think Clarence Darrow, I think he did a masterful job of destroying Bryant. And then he said, pityingly, that there was a giant. I believe I'm quoting directly, a giant once stood in those shoes. He was a shell of a man. And these guys knew each other for years. They were on the same side of a lot of battles. But ultimately, the person Bryant became, this sort of reactionary, cling to the Bible, burn witches, cranky old fundamentalist, was someone who was doing active harm to Christianity.
Yeah, that's the point.
And destroying him certainly drove the community away, but the community was already rabidly anti-science anyway. And there was no way they were going to come on board because nobody would permit honest science to be introduced as evidence. So when you're backed into that corner, as a lot of us feel like we are now with the Tea Party, when there's no possibility of engaging in an intelligent conversation because they just won't permit it, you have to go after them like they went after William Jennings Bryan. You have to destroy them. Mm-hmm. You have to humiliate them. You have to break them down in public and show whatever the hell's left of the public. And that's the key to the trial. It didn't just happen in the courtroom. It happened over radio. Mm-hmm. The whole country heard William Jennings Bryan being. So it didn't matter that he won in this, you know, backwater, you know, sister.
All white Ohio county. Yeah. Right.
It didn't matter that he won there. Of course he was going to win there. The fact that he lost in front of the larger community.
Yeah.
That's the way we approach being uncivil and vituperative. As I'm not uncivil at parties. I'm not uncivil in my professional life. I keep a civil tongue in my head. I'm a delightful, pleasant person to be around. But when you corner me and make it impossible for me to have an intelligent conversation because you won't fucking listen and you won't acknowledge the plain, simple history of your own movement because you're so terrified of the unraveling of everything you believe in, you leave me no choice but to go after you personally, which I would much rather not do. So don't make me do it. Anyway, that's my two cents.
On that note, just a very brief comment from US Uncut on Facebook that I really liked, and it's more vocabulary for folks. Let's replace the word austerity, a wonky word foreign to most people, with the phrase Hunger Games.
Yeah.
By cutting off food assistance for poor families, Scott Walker is taking the Hunger Games approach. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. I think I'll use that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Love to everybody. We love you all. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Gracie. Gracie keeps her paws very clean and dainty. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. We love hearing from you.
We do.
Feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, including our Facebook page, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Union's letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Quiet! The internet kitties are binge-watching the first two seasons of Martin Bashir.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.